Saber-Assigned Soulmates, written by Inimitably and read by Flower Parish. This is a Star Wars fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationships Cody / Obi-Wan Kenobi and Cody and Obi-Wan's lightsaber. This is part one of the Saber-Assigned Soulmates and Other Exaggerations series. Lunches on the Negotiator tended to get a little bit raucous, was a kind word for it. Breakfasts were very quiet, as the non-morning people were likely to shoot the morning people if they got too disruptive, and whether their blaster was set to stun or not would depend entirely on who was shooting and how much calf they'd already had. Dinners were chaotic, but still surprisingly organized. Days tended to be long, and most people were too tired to be rambunctious without a purpose. Lunches were the perfect happy medium. In the middle of the day, so no one was too drowsy, and on days where there were no missions in progress or planning, everyone was just antsy enough to need a break. The enthusiastic disregard for regulation-approved behavior faltered for a week or two when their general started joining them instead of sequestering himself away in the general's mess, but he insisted. It wasn't right for him to get a nicer room with nicer food just because he was a Jedi. The day he was informed that actually, the general's mess was meant for the general, visiting dignitaries, refugees, guests, honored prisoners, and just about anyone who might conceivably step foot on a military ship who didn't come out of a test tube, the poor trooper who'd well-meaningly recited the handbook at him was subjected to such a rant on the injustice of the rule that he still had stars in his eyes every time he recounted the story to anyone who hadn't already heard it a time or four. The troopers were confused, but flattered. No Natborn had ever come to their defense before, especially not so vehemently. The general's, "It's discrimination, pure and simple, and I won't stand for it," speech was the stuff of legend, and many who hadn't been in the audience hoped for a reprise someday. They'd gladly weather a little bit of bigotry if it meant someone would maybe be quick-thinking enough to get the whole thing on video. Obi-Wan had no idea his supremely undignified rant, which he'd followed up with an apology for shouting because, "It isn't your fault, my dear, and I don't mean to take it out on you, I just am furious," and so on, was what had earned him the right to sit among his men while they laughed and joked. He'd been quite lonely, all by himself, in his nice little dining room. Some would call getting saluted every time they entered a room an ego boost. He found it isolating. He didn't care what made his men start treating him like a comrade instead of a general when off duty. He was just happy to be there. In fact, his happiness at being included meant that he let some things slide he probably shouldn't have. Mostly, it was the little things he was certain every ship in the Gar had in common. He would become suddenly hard of hearing for a moment whenever someone mentioned the illegal still that definitely wasn't hidden in what was supposed to be a restroom that had had an out-of-order sign up for a suspiciously long period of time, or if he thought he saw contraband being not so discreetly exchanged, then he certainly couldn't accuse one of his loyal, valiant troopers of possessing such a thing without proof, could he? And the proof disappeared so quickly, if it had ever been there in the first place. The roughhousing was a bit of a different story. He'd been assured it was all in good fun. No one's feelings or bodies were getting hurt. Based on past experiences with the families he'd spent time around on missions while growing up, it wasn't that far beyond what most siblings did. That didn't stop him from being thrown for a loop the first time a man he'd never seen at anything less than inspection readiness careened across the room backwards, tripping over another brother's suddenly casually extended leg, almost landing in Obi-Wan's lap. At this point, though, he was used to it. He hadn't quite learned how not to flinch at more aggressive sounds yet, but each day he got more relaxed. As he relaxed, so did his men. They might have gotten just a little bit too comfortable with each other. If anyone was concerned about propriety, they probably would have made everyone tone things down before Waxer tried to steal Boyle's dessert, a small chocolate bar, a very rare privilege for troopers who'd never eaten anything but ration bars until Obi-Wan put his foot down, and if he had his way, they'd never know just how many favors he'd had to call in to pull those strings. And Boyle defended it. He ducked under Waxer's arm, then pulled it down after him, pushing himself up at the same time, sending Waxer sprawling across the table. Everyone pulled their trays back, but no one thought to reach for the object sitting a few inches above the top of Obi-Wan's tray. His lightsaber. The saber skidded off the table. In a stunning failure of weapon design, proving that the average lightsaber wielder did not share Obi-Wan and Anakin's unfortunate habit of letting themselves get disarmed, the hilts of most lightsabers are cylindrical. The weapon hit the ground and kept rolling, making it halfway across the mess before someone stuck out a foot and pinned it between their toe and the floor. Trapper leaned down to pick up the saber, but hadn't made it back to sitting fully upright before he was yelping without an ounce of dignity, dropping the weapon and shaking out his hand. He looked up at Obi-Wan, ignoring the crowd of his brothers leaning around their general to fix him with matching looks of judgment. "It bit me!" Obi-Wan called the saber back to his hand, clipping it safely out of the way on his belt. "I'm so sorry about that. Thank you for catching it for me." Someone snorted from near the back of the group. Based on past experience, Obi-Wan was willing to bet it was Fives. "I'm telling Cody you're coming for his job." There was another sound, not unlike an armored elbow hitting an armored stomach. It sounded suspiciously echo-shaped. Obi-Wan opened his mouth, tilting his head in the way he did when curious. Boyle cut him off. "Sorry about that, General." "No need to apologize. No harm, no foul." "It's at least half my fault, too," said Waxer. "Then the same sentiment applies," said Obi-Wan. "Trapper, is your hand all right?" Trapper was confused, looking at his hand again as he stole one of the empty spots at their table. "Yeah, it doesn't hurt or anything. It just startled me is all." "What exactly did you mean, it bit you? I may not be an expert, but I don't think that's how sabers work," Longshot interjected. "I mean, I picked it up, and it didn't like it. It was like an electric shock, but small. Not painful, just annoyed." The lightsaber shocked you with annoyed electricity. The next table over didn't bother pretending they weren't eavesdropping, blatantly laughing at the look Trapper was giving his hand, still held in front of him. "Sorry, Trap," one of the newer troopers called over. "Looks like you and the general aren't soulmates. Tough luck." His table mates laughed, but Obi-Wan raised a single eyebrow. "Soulmates?" Suddenly, the new trooper's friends were very interested in the contents of their trays. The one who made the remark looked like a deer in headlights. "Would you mind explaining what you meant by that?" Boyle snorted. "Yeah, Romeo, why don't you tell him what you meant by that?" Obi-Wan tried not to let his amusement show on his face. He knew how important clones' names were to them, and he would never insult one by questioning their choice, but he hadn't expected to hear that one. "Your name is Romeo?" Romeo was blushing. "Yes, sir. I'm, well, a bit of a romantic." "Nothing wrong with that." "It is when his nose is in a book instead of in his training manual," someone muttered, fondly but still mockingly. Romeo twisted in his seat, looking for the source of the comment. "Hey, I keep my extracurricular reading exclusively to my off-duty hours, thank you very much." Fives chipped in again. "Yeah, only because you don't want to be caught reading bodice rippers on the bridge." Obi-Wan tried very hard not to choke on his drink. Apparently, there were some forms of contraband his men kept out of his line of sight. "Excuse you, I'll have you know there are very few bodices involved." "So you'll admit you're reading trashy Holo novels?" "They are not trashy, they're romantic. They're smut. They are erotica." "Is there a difference?" "Yes." Romeo was bright red now, but sitting up straight and with all the dignity he could muster. "Erotica sounds more tasteful." For a man being publicly shamed for his taste in literature, especially one whose appreciation of smut hollow novels, pardon, erotica, was being revealed in front of his commanding officer, he was impressively poised. However, when Obi-Wan lost the fight against the giggles he'd been valiantly trying to suppress, he was not the first to do so. All right, gentlemen, rein it in. He took a moment to compose himself, struggling to follow his own advice. When he failed for a moment, he kicked off another wave among everyone else. It is not my place to judge Romeo's taste in literature, or anyone else's. Whatever makes them happy. However, I would like to know what my lightsaber has to do with Trapper, especially now that erotic hollow novels are somehow part of the equation. Romeo was trying very hard to meet his eyes, but never managed it for very long. You see, sir, there's this trope in, certain kinds of novels. Oh yeah? And what kinds of novels are those, Romeo? Shut up. The trooper to Romeo's left stopped grinning suddenly, wincing as if he'd experienced something unpleasant. For example, a brother stomping on his foot under the table. But those would be, well, Jedi-themed ones. Romeo's face scrunched up like he'd tasted something sour. His eyes were cast somewhere far to the left of Obi-Wan, and his head was tilted slightly downward, as if he was expecting a reprimand. Jedi-themed hollow novels? Yes, sir. Erotic Jedi-themed hollow novels? Yes, sir. Obi-Wan sat silently. He could see the whole group getting tenser and tenser, and Romeo attempting to unnoticeably shrink down smaller and smaller. He would give it just another moment. He wanted his response to land perfectly. Ah, yes, I'm familiar with the concept. Briefly, a pause. A dear friend of mine writes those. The results were magnificent. At least one spit take, someone choking on their food. Romeo's head shot up, making stunned, slightly horrified eye contact with Obi-Wan. In short, absolute chaos. He wanted to make it worse. Don't worry, though. I'm sure you haven't read anything based on me. Side eyes, going in so many directions. Unless, of course, you've read anything by Akano Odno. I don't read it myself, but he assures me he receives nothing but the best reviews. Panic on all sides. Fascinating. While looking in Romeo's eyes, he could see the young trooper speed run through the five stages of grief. That was a yes, then, and quite an amusing one. Not a surprise. His morally ambiguous friend had informed him that his works, all published under a pseudonym, of course, were among the most popular erotic hollow novels in the galaxy, proclaiming, "Only the best for my good friend." The good friend in question spent the entire conversation slowly dying inside, but now he was grateful that he'd still paid attention. That did not, however, mean that he would ever tell the pirate he was right in his prediction that Obi-Wan would be thanking him for his creation someday. Though, frankly, he still thought he deserved a cut of the profits, an inspiration tax, if you will. Jedi didn't get paid much, and enough special desserts to feed an army didn't come cheap. But I digress. What's this you were saying about soulmates? Romeo squared his shoulders and tried to will his blush away. It did not work. Well, sir, as I was saying, there's a trope in a lot of Jedi erotica about lightsabers and the way most people can't really pick them up. People talk about it on the HoloNet a lot, how they've seen lightsabers lying around when their Jedi dropped them or something and tried to touch them and gotten shocked like Trapper did. Different people got different reactions, even with the same lightsaber, so they were trying to figure out what made a saber shock somebody instead of just buzzing at them or something. Then somebody swore they saw a civilian hand a saber back to a Jedi without getting zapped at all, so obviously, some people can touch them, just not everybody. Jedi are always talking about how their sabers are a part of them, your lightsaber is your life, and all of that, and, well, people are romantics. So the story got around that only someone a Jedi likes can touch their saber, and then it became someone they love, which kinda spiraled into soulmates. The theory is, if the lightsaber is actually a part of the Jedi, then if you can pick up a lightsaber without getting shocked, it's because you're the Jedi's soulmate. He hesitated for a moment, then forged on. The author you mentioned is credited with starting it, actually. There are a lot of books based on the concept now, but he's the one who did it first. He has this series. It's so good. It's a super involved slow burn about a Jedi and a clone, Master Kenno Wanbi, and his commander Glory. And it's kind of a major plot point that only Glory... He cut himself off, freezing for a moment before burying his head in his hands. Yep, I heard it that time. Never mind. Obi-Wan's sabacc face had never received such a workout in his life, but this was just too good. It was glorious, if one could forgive the pun. What a fascinating premise. I had never thought of it that way, though I suppose there is a thread of truth in every tale. Waxer, are you well? Honestly, his men were just too easy to rile up. I'm fine, sir, Waxer choked out as Boyle pounded on his back. Are you sure? I can call for a medic. Not necessary, sir. I just, misswallowed. Very well, then, if you're sure. I am, sir, but I'd love to know what you meant by that. That there's some truth in Romeo's Jedi porn? Obi-Wan ignored the indignant erotica and turned slightly in his seat, angling himself to have his back to the door so he could face both his and Romeo's tables at once and quit turning his head every few words. No one bothered pretending they weren't prepared to hang on to his every word. He smiled at them. The thing most people don't know about lightsabers is they're slightly sentient. Not the weapon itself, but the crystal inside the weapon. He paused. Actually, how much do you know about lightsabers? They're swords, they glow, they can cut through anything, they're connected to the Force, and they don't like me, apparently, Trapper said promptly. That's a fair assessment, though my lightsaber certainly does not speak for other lightsabers. All right, we'll start there then. Obi-Wan took a sip of his tea, then unhooked his lightsaber from his belt. He held it out in front of him, then opened his palm, levitating the hilt several inches above it. As is likely intuitive for anyone with knowledge about weaponry, this is the hilt. He dropped it back into his palm, twisted his wrist so the saber faced upward, then ignited it. He considered it a personal victory that none of his men had so much as twitched away from him, even as he essentially pulled a weapon on all of them in the middle of their lunch break. This is the blade. It's plasma, hence the glow and cut through anything, though there are some exceptions to that second one. Beskar is a notable one. It's powered by a crystal inside. He extinguished the saber and tossed the hilt in the air, letting it flip a time or two before catching it sideways a few inches above his palm again. He slowly separated the pieces, pulling them apart like an exploded diagram so all the components could be viewed. Shining in the center was a small rock. This is a kyber crystal. When Jedi say our lightsabers are a part of us, this is what we are referring to. There are several locations in which kyber crystals can be found, but they are a closely guarded secret. When a Jedi finds themselves in need of a new saber, they travel to one of those locations. They will not find a crystal will find them. They will meditate with their crystal until they know what kind of hilt would suit it best, then meditate while creating their saber, then meditate with the newly created saber. He pulled the pieces back into their correct places and resealed the hilt, twirling it so it could be seen from all sides by his captive audience before bringing it back to its center position. The more time a Jedi spends with their crystal, largely in meditation, but also in combat, or, to a lesser extent, merely in close quarters, the more the two bond. A bonded crystal and Jedi are connected, simultaneously parts of a whole and distinct units. I'm afraid I can't explain it better than that, though I know it's not the most useful of descriptions. It always frustrated me when masters tried to explain the bond to me before I felt it for myself. I thought they were being cryptic on purpose. He smiled fondly at the memories. They weren't, though. Truly, there's nothing else like it. It has its pros and cons. It is an advantage because a Jedi fighting with a saber they are bonded to is not fighting alone. The saber is not just a weapon, it is also an ally. They will fare better in combat because their weapon is actively working to help them use it. However, Jedi are never supposed to let their saber out of their sight for a reason. I know I harp on Anakin rather a lot when he drops it in battle, but that's because it's dangerous. The destruction of a crystal can be devastating to the Jedi bonded to it, and I don't just mean emotionally. Sudden termination of a crystal bond has severe physical symptoms. It's a tangible weakness that is, ultimately, very accessible for enemies if they know about it. He let the saber drop back into his palm, rehooking it on his belt. I assume I don't need to request that you all keep that piece of information to yourselves. I would hate to see what it would be used for if it fell into the wrong hands. Instant mutters of agreement around him. So that brings us to Romeo, and ultimately, Trapper. Lightsabers are powered by the crystal, and the crystal is tied to the Jedi. Due to that bond, sabers only want to be wielded by the person they are bonded to. Looping back to that moderate amount of sentience I mentioned previously, they can sense the presence in the force of the person touching them. If that person is not the one they are bonded to, they will not hesitate to express their dissatisfaction. It's a defense mechanism to prevent the kind of harm that can befall a Jedi if someone with ill intent gets their hands on the saber. But I'm not Force-sensitive, said Trapper. Every living thing has a distinct appearance in the Force. All species, sapient or not. Everyone's Force signature is unique and can resemble another's. For example, close family members often appear similar in the Force, similar to the way they might resemble each other visually. He caught the look Boyle and Waxer shot each other and frowned. And no, identical physical appearance or DNA do not lead to an identical Force signature. Not even close. I've always viewed a Force signature as the truest measure of a person, an identifier of what makes them them. It's like a portrait of the colors that make up their soul. You all have a base component that marks you as close to each other, while still looking utterly individual. Think of it as like planets. Planets are generally spherical, so we can consider them all the same shape. However, being the same shape does not mean Tatooine is identical to Naboo. They are both distinct from each other in millions of ways, large and small, despite being the same type of celestial body. Though really, appearances in the Force are another very involved subject that I don't entirely understand, and I experience it daily, so enough of that for now. He took a sip of tea again, giving everyone a moment to process his words and offer questions if they had any. He hadn't intended to turn lunch into an impromptu lecture, but everyone still looked interested, and he'd missed teaching, so really, what was the harm? So, lots of people have Force signatures that resemble each other, such as families both biological and adoptive, or romantic groupings, or closely knit groups of people. They can also indicate compatibility. Not romantically, necessarily, just that two strangers with similar Force signatures would likely work well together, and understand each other, and be content in each other's presence. Lightsabers tend to like people, such as the civilian Romeo mentioned, for this reason. If the civilian was able to pick up the Jedi's saber, carry it for a moment, and return it to them without experiencing any discomfort, then the two of them might have a high chance of being well-suited for each other's company. Obi-Wan paused, considering his words. Incompatible Force signatures don't necessarily signify incompatible people, though. People don't have to be similar to get along. Opposites attract, or so they say. And teammates with different strengths and weaknesses balance each other out. For example, my Force signature is absolutely nothing like Anakin's. I was honored to teach him and enjoy working with him and greatly enjoy his company, but my saber despises him. It drives him quite insane, actually. My saber will let him return it to me if I drop it, or let him wield it if it is a true emergency, but will remain present in the back of his mind, buzzing constantly in a reminder that it is not happy. And what a pain that was. For all the growing up he'd done under the Order's tutelage, Anakin was still more capable of whining like a petulant child, and he proved it the day he asked Obi-Wan if they could try sparring with each other's weapons. And to add an extra layer of complexity, different people and sabers see things in the Force slightly differently. If we can return to the analogy that a Force signature is like an imprint of the colors of one's soul, Force signature preference is like a color combination. My favorite color is gold, and I've always thought it pairs nicely with blue. Anakin also likes blue, but he thinks it clashes with gold horribly. While we both see the same colors, we interpret what suits what differently. Similarly, while my saber loathes him, his adores me. He took a moment to let his listeners react to that. That sounded more polite than saying he took a moment to let his men finish laughing at his former Padawan. Then he focused on Trapper. So, I would implore you not to take my Saber's reaction to you personally. It doesn't mean I do not care for you or enjoy your company, and it has no bearing on how well we work together. It simply means that our souls are made of different materials, and the shiny psychic rock in my sword thinks those materials don't look good next to each other. The laughter his statement received was startled but heartfelt. His words were unexpectedly blunt, and not quite as respectful as a description of a kyber crystal should probably be, but they were genuine. He would be devastated if one of his men took a relatively impersonal phenomenon such as a lightsaber shock as an insult or an indicator of his own opinions about them. My saber has a tendency to be picky. I can count on one hand the number of people it's reacted positively to and shown anything more than polite neutrality, even among people I've known and loved for more than half of my life. If it's ever been fond of someone, they haven't told me, though I'd be fascinated to know. That kind of person would have to be very special, I think, and I'd love to have the privilege of getting to know them. It has also shocked dozens and caused active harm to at least four, though to be fair, they were trying to seize it as a trophy won in battle at the time. With this knowledge, if any of you do not feel comfortable risking touching my saber, you do not have to. If you find it on the battlefield, feel free to comm me its coordinates and then leave it behind. I can always retrieve it later. It'll be a fine penance for losing it in the first place. He was always so proud when he managed to make one of his men laugh. This many times in one conversation had to be a new record. In conclusion, Trapper, I apologize for your injury. Blame my saber, if you please. Romeo, though likely dramatized, your novels are not wholly wrong. Some of the most famous Jedi duos in history are specifically noted to have been able to wield each other's lightsabers almost interchangeably. It was seen as proof that they were destined to meet each other, that the Force had created them and brought them together for a purpose. So, what I suppose I am saying is, while there's nothing inherently romantic about the phenomenon of someone being able to hold a lightsaber that does not belong to them, soulmates is not an inaccurate term to use. Several steps away, Cody was very grateful for the comm message that had made him pause just outside the mess hall door. It hadn't been anything important, just a notification for incoming requisitions paperwork. It had only taken him a moment to decide to deal with it later, but that moment was long enough without the sound of his own footsteps for him to overhear the conversation happening inside and hesitate. It was a spot of rare good luck that he'd received that message close enough to the door to listen, but far enough away that no one inside had any idea he was there. He did a sharp about-face and walked away. He had ration bars in his office. Missing one lunch wouldn't kill him, and he had more important things to do than eat. Cody had a lot of thinking to do. If he was blushing while doing that thinking, then there was no one around to see it, so did it really happen? And if his fingers were twitching slightly, as if trying to wrap around something that wasn't there, or his palm was itching for a familiar weight to be pressed against it, sending an almost electric warmth buzzing up his spine and humming softly, sweetly, affectionately, in the back of his mind, then, well, that was nobody's business but his own. The end.